My name is Taco. I want to say shout out to all the raccoons on campus. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Burnaby.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you.
Hello, hello. I'm Charlotte Farrell, host of Echo Wisdom Conversations, a podcast component of the Echo Wisdom Nature Guide and Forest Medicine Training Program. Today, you're going to have a masterclass facilitated by Dr. Carrie Crow, who is the founding director of Eco Wisdom, a healing life balance preserve that you're going to hear more about. And she will be interviewing, helping us to understand and be more aware of Jill Satterfield, who is a renowned international mindfulness meditation lecturer, a speaker, a curriculum developer, and the founder of a yoga meditation system that many people are asking about, but today you will hear about and get an update. So, Dr. Carrie, will you tell us a few more things about the Echo Wisdom Preserve? Because when I talk to people with the preserve, they have images of wild animals. How can people be out in the world? So tell us a little bit about Echo Wisdom and then how this connects over to bringing us two speakers and teachers such as Jill Satterfield.
I'm a bit distracted, I have to say, having Jill here. It's just so tremendous. So Eco Wisdom Forest Preserve is over 200 acres. It's up near Algonquin Park in Ontario, Canada. We do have wild roaming moose, bear, lynx, deer, you name it, fox. And now that the snow has come on the ground, we can see who's around, who we're sharing the land with. Yeah, so this initiative came from, personal experience with disability and chronic illness, chronic pain, and finding a refuge through mindfulness and mindful nature connection and contemplative practices like contemplative photography out on the land. And so, we live off grid in the forest. And basically what happened was I was living in the city and I had chronic migraine headaches. So 60% minimum of my time, I was completely incapacitated by pain. So you called me Dr. Carrie. I haven't heard Dr. Carrie doctor for a long time, but I have worked as a professor and a researcher, health researcher, and a professor of disability studies. But when I acquired my disability, my life changed dramatically. And so I was living with a lot of pain and a lot of time just sort of working on coping with that pain. But when I moved to the forest, I noticed some shifts. And one of those shifts was, for me, it alleviated my migraines. And so that allowed me more time to do creative things with my, photos on the land. And then that led to like sharing my videos and photos. And then that led to like offering programs and thinking of bringing back my work in neuroscience and thinking about how do we do this kind of programming, nature-based mindfulness for people with disabilities. So we get internet, we're up on top of a hill, so we get satellite internet and we just run it from the forest.
And it's wonderful to note that after saying what happens there, that we don't have to say symptoms might include and then have 15 minutes of this may kill you, this may cause you not to be able to breathe, but really how it opens you up to feeling how nature and time in nature can be healing, an actual evidence of a person who's done that and is now through podcasts, through classes, enabling other people to know about mindfulness and the whole range of things that come into nature-based studies. Mm. Now you are introducing us to someone that has made marks around the world with speaking to people, doing workshops, helping people understand mindfulness. And could you tell us, bring us a little bit more information about Jill?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just so delighted to have Jill Satterfield join us here for our Eco-Wisdom conversation today. And I would like to offer this introduction so that people know, you know, who she is. She's an international Dharma and mindfulness meditation teacher, and she integrates somatics, which is body awareness, with contemplative psychology, and has 35 years of experience engaging deeply in Buddhist teachings and practices, including numerous silent retreats. She works with a number of places, including Spirit Rock. With her primary teacher, Jill was, in fact, the first to offer a mindful movement component to the silent retreats at Spirit Rock and the Insight Meditation Center. And she's been doing these kinds of things for over 25 years. And she's been featured in and has written for many publications. Jill founded a training and service organization called the School for Contemplative Action, Mindfulness and Somatic Practices for Chronic Pain, Illness, Trauma, and addictions. Her applied embodied mindfulness trainings are part of UCLA's Mindful Awareness Research Center, as well as Spirit Rock's Mindful Yoga and Meditation Training. And to learn more, I invite you to look, check her your website, jillsatterfield.org, and we'll have a link, I'm sure, as part of the resources to this podcast. And Jill is a mentor with Jack Kornfield and Tara Brock's Mindfulness Meditation Teacher Certification Training Program. This is where I did my training and where she acted as my mentor. And I'm so very grateful to have met her. And even though I have graduated from my teacher training, I continue any opportunity I get to continue to learn from Jill, attending her classes and workshops and mentoring opportunities. So it is my deepest honor and pleasure to introduce people today in this conversation to Jill Satterfield and her insightful, embodied, accessible, and creative approaches to mindfulness meditation. Thank you for being here, Jill.
Thank you for inviting me. Very grateful to have an opportunity to talk to you, both of you, and also to your community. It's a pleasure, a real pleasure.
And it's so necessary because today, you know, that mindfulness has gotten into the conversation. You have all kinds of people popping up with things without foundation. So happy that we're going to be hearing more of the foundation and research and 35 years of experience that you've had.
Yeah. And well, longer practicing, but in teaching around that much. Yeah, I know it makes me, it's always funny to hear that many years of anything because I don't think I'm much older than that, but you know how it goes. Aging can bring hopefully some wisdom.
You know, when I was thinking back, Jill is one of the guest educators with Eco-Wisdom. When I was reflecting back on your talk to our community, you know, you were talking about sort of imagination and the power of imagination, visualization. We talk about it as well, of course, with the connecting with nature. It just seems to work so well for many different reasons. And I mean, having this conversation with Charlotte is really meaningful too, because Charlotte is a poet and a creative minded person who also has done sort of community health initiatives on the ground, but also workshops related to creative writing and that kind of thing. So I know, and I've heard Charlotte perform her poetry. It's so powerful. Last time she read, I was in tears. But anyway, it's great to have this conversation because I think all three of us can appreciate the importance of creativity and visualization. And when we get stuck in ways to practice forest bathing or ways to practice mindfulness or meditation, and we don't make room for these alternatives, we are losing something, right? And it's not in part accessibility. Like we serve people who for parts of their day, for parts of their lives, you know, it's really hard to get out and about. They may be using mobility aids. They may, you know, on Saturday's program, we had someone who I know is spending probably about 75% of his time in bed due to a pressure sore. And he's been in this situation for over a year. So he was really happy to come and join us. All kinds of situations. So using, activating that imagination it allows for inclusivity of people with disabilities or chronic illnesses, et cetera. But it's also so powerful.
And it also offers validation. When you were talking about 35 years, I have 45 years in nutrition and health education. I worked for Toronto Department of Public Health as a health promoter. And one day I was on my way back to the health department after doing a workshop for teens on stress. And a young woman flying, not yielding at an intersection, hit my car and knocked me to the side of the 405. And I had a spinal bruise and a brain hematoma. And pills. I wrote a poem about pills, pills, and pins. If only this guy's pen and pill could heal me, because they gave me so many pills, I would have become a serious addict if I had taken them. I fortunately had a godmother in L.A. who's an actress and was working with a chiropractor. And my medical doctor said, quack, quack, quack. Well, that person put me back on my feet and those other healing energies. But I think what's really great about EcoWisdom, what's great about what you're doing, is raising the level of awareness among people. I just lost a friend in LA who would reach the point where she would rather go on to greater glory than endure the amount of painful remedies, I mean, painful approaches. And it's exciting for us to be able to share and make people, ordinary people, aware of the practices, the things that you're going to be talking about that you do, making people aware that going out in nature is not as scary as going down and having someone give you codeine, fentanyl, just a whole list of five or six things to the point that people can't think. So I'm really happy for these opportunities to let people know and not let people think, oh, alternative is not as good, but alternative can save your life. So I'm excited to be helping to facilitate what you're talking about, because it's really important for people to know how legitimate it is. And either those, as you said, who want to become practitioners and those who just want to be relatives or friends who can encourage people to listen and hear about forest bathing and listen and hear about meditation and yoga. So I'm going to back out, but that's just why I spent 45 years in that. I've pushed aside all of that bureaucratic work, imagination. Reverend Michael Beckwith on this past Sunday at Agape in LA spoke about imagination and charge people to use their imagination as a best practice. So sipping up and going back. But what you both are doing and what these conversations are doing are really important for ordinary people to know that there is an alternative to the way that pain and discomfort is being handled.
You know, your talk about pain ties into this embodiment piece. Right. And often in our programs, people are talking about having either emotional pain or physical pain, right? And with the mindfulness piece is like making room for it, you know, and being with it, witnessing it, and like building that capacity, not to push it down, not to like drive it away, but to allow it to coexist with the beauty, wonder, and awe of the natural world. And I just want to pause and just open it up to Jill. Any thoughts around either the imagination piece or the embodiment and pain piece, if you want to share anything you like.
It's a wide net. Thank you. Well, let me start with imagination, since Charlotte was just talking about that. And I think every person on the planet has an imagination, first of all. And secondly, every person on the planet can utilize imagination to live their best life. Because I think when we become what is called in Buddhist psychology fixed, that when we have a fixed view about anything, it's not helpful, let's say, it's harmful. And so even in someone who doesn't have the misfortune, or fortunately doesn't have to cope with a chronic disease or disability or pain, anything that's chronic that keeps us from doing the things that we really want to do at times. You know, even if you can get along and you know, you feel relatively fine and don't have to care about your body too much and your mind is, you know, happy as a clam much of the time, or at least that you know of, it's still beneficial to have an imagination, because why live as we have been told when there's so many more opportunities and options to live a full life that might not look like everyone else's. And so we narrow our scope quite a bit when we think we need to do something like this or that or the other thing that our culture or even our parents or even our schools might have prescribed. And then I'm not sure we want to jump into the basket of medical prescriptions, but I think it helps us all to know that we can change our own minds, change our own hearts, and that we have agency with our bodies, no matter what. And so imagination plays a huge role in that.
And I see that also tying into, as I hear you speak, challenging dominant societal norms about how things should be done, right?
Yeah.
And I just think about training to become a nature and forest therapy guide and how with our eco-wisdom, we're like, because of some of the experiences I had where, you know, it just didn't quite fit in other people's minds that I could do the training and that I would require some access accommodations. So to shift people's, when we enter into the world of imagination, and I think that a lot of people with disabilities and chronic illness, how we navigate the world.
Oh, you have to be imaginative.
You require this, right?
Yeah.
Like I remember one of our participants was talking about how like, it's not a choice. Like, this is how we live, right?
Right.
We're always trying to like, okay, if I want to go out with a friend to a film, like, what are all the creative solutions? How am I going to get from here to there and how, up? Like, what? He's just like, or I want to have a party, you know, where's it going to be? What kind of food? Like, just what kind of lighting sound? Like, it just always stuff to be sorted out and you have to approach it from this creative. So I think, in a sense, we're challenging creativity allows us, it's part of the process of challenging dominant ideas of how to do things and how to be. And so we can find through imagination a place of belonging just as we are, right? Mm-hmm. And moving through the world in creative and unique ways.
Yes, and upgrade our systems. You know, if it weren't for those of us that have, you know, had to navigate with imagination, just be a little bit more creative about how we're going to be doing what most people would think of as normal things, then there wouldn't be as much access as there is now. And we know that a lot more access is needed. And so we come up with ideas to make life simpler or more accessible or more enjoyable or understandable, depending on what the condition is that we're working with. So we help each other in that way. It's really a very compassionate response, not just for ourselves, but for all of us.
And I know this is a little bit of a side topic, but it really is woven into a lot of what eco-wisdom is doing because we're based on the land. Eco-grief. How do we envision moving forward, moving through eco-grief, finding solutions without feeling overwhelmed, right? I think there's a place for creativity and imagination there too.
Absolutely. And also to be present, because one of the things that I loved that Joanna Macy talked about in, and I've forgotten, it was some talk of hers that I read, it was how we don't want to plan. I mean, we need to plan ahead. We need to use discernment and wisdom so that we're not continuing down a road that maybe there are ways to change in terms of the environment, let's say. But we also want to be present with the environment that we still have. And so enjoying nature that's still here rather than just mourning the loss of it in the future, I think we need to do a little bit of both. And so there are still trees and flowers and grass and birds and clouds to varying degrees. Of course, there's loss, but what we still have, we can appreciate, and what we still have, we can meet with and become one with, you know, and really open joy in the heart because of. So it's important not to forget what's here. And that partially is what mindfulness can open us to, is to be in the present moment, not always projecting into the future or having regret about the past. Oh, it used to be like this. Well, it's not anymore. I mean, as harsh as that might sound. So we become more and more used to this is what we have. And then maybe use the imagination, hopefully, to say, well, let's not go that road that's predicted. What if we went around it like this? Or what if we tried it like that? You know, and we do that out of necessity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is important about mindfulness is legitimizing it. I was in the Nature Guide program in the very first practice of self-care. We are so distracted from self-care, making it almost like, well, do that on your own time. It's selfish. But could you speak a little bit about mindfulness and self-care?
Sure. Well, I think one of the things that you mentioned a little while ago, Charlotte, was alternative therapies. And so I think we want to have both and. We want to have a medical system that we hopefully can trust and rely on some. But there's not one protocol that meets everything that we might need. There's not one person that meets everything that we might need, not one school, et cetera, not one food. So I think it's important to open our minds to what do I need and what could I benefit from? And so that right there is self-care. And if someone's saying that that's extra and we can't get out of bed because we're not feeling well, because we weren't eating well, we didn't know that we needed to cut out some of the things that were harmful or caused inflammation or, you know, whatever our condition could be detrimental to our physical or mental well-being, then we don't know to stop or change or look elsewhere. And so education is really important. Information is really important, but also just listening to ourselves is really important because, well, maybe if I eat a lot of cheese, I'm going to be blowing my nose all day. So maybe I won't do that. You know, I'll cut out dairy, for instance, but it's just asking ourselves, well, how am I feeling right now? And what might be the best way for me to support myself, given what I know, and where might I learn more skillful means to feel a little better or stretch what I think might be a limit into limitlessness so that I can actually do my job, so that I can actually show up for my family, so that I can actually go to the dinner that I've been invited to or host one, you know? So self-care is essential. And mindfulness brings us to knowing what is right now. And when we connect with the present moment, we're connecting with ourselves. And connecting with ourselves means that we have the opportunity to take care of ourselves. And it also then opens us to the fact, really, that taking care of ourselves is taking care of all of us. So it really kind of doesn't matter what direction we go. We could be, having intention to serve others. That serves us. We grow and learn from empathy and compassion. So it's really a two-way street, but we need to include ourselves in all the equations of life, not in a selfish way, but in a self-meaning way, a self-validating way. We do matter. We're one of many, and all of us matter, really. So mindfulness brings us to understanding what we might need right now, what the current causes and conditions are, and how we might take a little bit better care.
I'd like to jump in and talk a little bit about, you know, my experience with my journey of finding what I call wholeness rather than cure or wellness necessarily, but I tried everything. I was doing everything, you name it, every type of physiotherapy, occupational therapy, shiatsu therapy, like you name it. I was doing it all. I was really trying to be well as I could. And at a certain point, I was at a critical point. I'd been hit by a truck and my specialist said, you are at risk of a full relapse, which would mean going back to using the wheelchair that I was using for a number of years. And I was like, what is it that I need? And this is where like the self-care, this deep listening, and it was going on retreat in nature. And through mindfulness, it allowed me to sort of reconceptualize, to find these new meanings. What is it? Like really deep questions, right? Like, what am I doing here? And how am I connected to this plant and this tree? And how is this tree connected to me? Like the interdependence of it all. And to see that reflected back to me through the natural world and feeling this sense of wholeness emerging over time in me, and sense of enoughness and deep connection with the power of connection, and finding wellness in all of that. And those were things that I came to understand through mindfulness practices in nature. Like, I think that if I was just doing those other therapies, like the physiotherapy, occupational therapy, like there was no opportunity for me to just reframe and come at it from a very different place and say, what am I doing here? Where is my place? What is my purpose? What is my, and to see myself in the eyes of the tree reassuring me that I was okay the way I was. Not all trees are standing straight, mm-hmm. you know?
What I learned from your nature walk was not only that, but trees reach out to each other. I was terrified of driving with my son in California up to Palmdale, because you have to go through this thing that's 14 miles, it's no lights, and then 14 miles of curves, and he drives kind of fast, and I was so in knots. But in that personal care, when you talk about feeling different, feeling something different from the trees, when you gave us that sit spot, I thought, this is ridiculous. Honestly, Jill, I thought, I have met some people that are way out there. But in following it, it was amazing, because when I sat there, it's just listen and imagine. I really developed metta with the tree. And also, I couldn't go to a forest. I'm in Los Angeles. I thought there are no trees. Well, when I looked around, there were lots of trees. There was one tree in the front. I'm just sitting still, because I think from children, kids get so much distraction. If they sit still and seem to be looking out a window, they're criticized for daydreaming. But being told, it's okay to just sit and do nothing and look at a tree, I really began to feel the power of trees, so, and the energy. So I think being able to talk about this, when you talk about mindfulness, some people have got mindful courses and they've outlined things for, if they're so over-outlined that you don't want to do it. But by the simplicity that you talked about, just saying it's all right. It's all right to think about you, how your heart feels, how things smell when you're sitting still out in nature, even when you're at a bus stop and there's a tree there and all this busyness is around you, that you still can come to mindfulness. So I'm so excited that you both are finding so many ways to teach this to people.
Yeah. And so much of it is connection. Right. So again, if we connect to ourselves, we connect to each other, because we have many more similarities than we do differences. If we connect to a tree, we connect to ourselves. Trees are completely connected. They're completely interconnected, you know, and then the more we learn about fungi, and I mean, you know, we don't know half of what's going on right now, which is actually kind of cool, because it means that we can dream. And who knows, maybe even what we're dreaming is real, or real on one level. I mean, quantum physics has thrown many things on its head that we thought we knew or were proven. And, you know, there's room for both. And so when we define ourselves so tightly, or we define our world so tightly, there's very little growth and substantive change in a direction that includes more connection and kindness and compassion and caring for each other and this, you know, very delicate, beautiful planet that we live on. So we want to connect to anything that we can, really, one moment at a time, and then we feel more whole. You know, we feel our place here, right now, together. We don't isolate, which is terrible for our systems, our nervous system, and for each other. But we, you know, we want to really recognize the unseen as much as the seen. The unseen, I mean, you know, a lot of connection is unseen. I mean, when we talk about trees, even, you know, it's like we don't naturally see the root system of trees, or how the salmon moving down a stream feeds the tree roots. You know, I mean, there's just so much interdependence in nature. And we think we're different than that, and we're really not.
I'd like to circle back to pain, bringing connection to pain. When I first acquired my severe disability, I had over 3 years, not one moment of a break of chronic severe pain. And I just remember connecting to this blossom in my backyard and just being with the blossom and then looking at the light and looking at the texture. And I just felt I was in the company of this blossom, and it made room for it. I wasn't pushing away the pain, but through the connection, I felt like the flower was helping.